Hello there and welcome to The Monarchy with me, Samson Sees, only on Press TV and nowhere else. This is the controversial show that shows you the counter-mainstream stories that are all about Britain. Stick around because the following stories are not being shown on the networks like the way we show them. What are the latest issues gripping the not-so-okay UK? This is what we're talking about. A committee of UK lawmakers has warned that NATO is not well prepared to face what it calls the new threat posed by Russia and has serious deficiencies in its command structures, its ability to predict and warn of potential attack, and in the readiness of its forces.
The UK's Parliamentary Defence Committee has demanded that Western military powers strengthen NATO to prepare for confrontation with Russia. The report by the cross-party group of Conservative, Labour and Liberal Democrat MPs complains that the NATO alliance has not considered Russia as an adversary or a potential territorial threat to its member states for 20 years and has now only been forced to do so as a result of Russia's recent actions in eastern Ukraine. In the interim, NATO alliance has been weakened as member states have cut their defence budgets, leaving it ill-prepared to face up to Russian aggression and potentially lacking the collective political will to take concerted action. To remedy these supposed failings, the Defence Committee calls on September's NATO summit in Wales to expand the existing NATO Rapid Reaction Force, undertake the pre-positioning of equipment in the Baltic states, establish a continuous presence of NATO troops in the Baltics, and re-establish large-scale military exercises, including representatives from all NATO member states. It also advocates an increase in defence spending by all member states. Most significant is the committee's proposal that the alliance should broaden the terms of Articles 4 and 5 in its founding treaty, which trigger collective action in the event of an armed attack on a NATO ally.
And this year, the United Kingdom will host one of the most important summits in NATO's history. In Wales this September, we'll bring together leaders to discuss how NATO can keep building stability in an unpredictable world. As host, Britain has a real opportunity to help shape the debate, and today the Secretary-General and I have agreed on three clear priorities for the Wales summit. First, we must consider the long-term implications of the Russia-Ukraine crisis. The last NATO summit to be held in Britain was the first since the fall of communism. It paved the way to reunite our divided continent and for our Eastern European partners to join the alliance. Today, they feel threatened once again. Russia's illegal aggression against Ukraine has underlined NATO's strength in collective defence, and allies have shown solidarity in response, sending planes, ships or troops. But at the Wales summit, we must strengthen our ability to respond quickly to any threat against an ally, to reassure those who fear for their own country's security, and to deter further Russian aggression. We should make clear to Russia that NATO has only ever sought to be her partner, not a threat. But Russia, by its own ongoing illegal actions in a neighbouring country and threatening behaviour to NATO allies, is preventing such cooperation in the future. Second, Afghanistan. As we near the end of NATO's longest ever combat mission, we should discuss the next chapter in our relationship with Afghanistan. How we can continue to train, advise and sustain the Afghan security forces to ensure that they preserve what we've achieved together, securing their own country and preventing Afghanistan from once again being a haven for terrorists. Finally, we must ensure that NATO is addressing the new risks from an unstable world of failed states, regional conflicts, terrorism and cyber attacks. In particular, we should agree how NATO can provide practical support to countries that need to strengthen their security sector. Whether in Libya, Georgia, or the Gulf, we should work with those who want our help, sending specialist mentoring teams, providing advice on defence planning, or even offering full-scale training missions like the one Libyan troops are completing right here in Britain.
It states the criteria, doctrine and responses to calls under Article 4 for collective security support against asymmetric attacks must be re-examined. In particular, it argues that the word armed should be removed from Article 5 so as to enable action in response to any form of attack. This should include Russia's ability to paralyze an opponent in the pursuit of its interests with a range of tools including psychological operations, information warfare, and intimidation with massing of conventional forces, even where such actions are not attributable.
Since Russia destabilized Ukraine,
the report gives the lie to Prime Minister David Cameron's supposed reassurances that Britain is not going to start World War III with Russia over Ukraine. After comparing the crisis in Ukraine to the crises that triggered World War I and World War II, Cameron has stated, "We are not about to launch a European war. We are not about to send the fleet to the Black Sea. We are not looking for a military confrontation. But what we should do is use the economic power that we have."
That will make clear that we will not be intimidated by Russia's aggressive behaviour.
Contrary to the Defence Committee's presentation of NATO standing on the sidelines of events, the alliance has pursued this strategy ever since the liquidation of the Soviet Union in 1991. Beginning that year, the Western powers, with the US and Germany in the lead, set about dismantling Yugoslavia by recognizing the breakaway states of Slovenia, Croatia, and then Bosnia, and culminating in the NATO bombardment of Serbia in 1999. This was followed by the sponsoring of the Rose Revolution in Georgia in 2003 and the Orange Revolution in Ukraine in 2004, both aimed at bringing to power pro-Western regimes. In 2008, the US encouraged a Georgian assault on the breakaway South Ossetia province. Pushed onto a back foot by the failure of the Georgian operation, as well as the disastrous outcomes of Western interventions against Afghanistan and Iraq, NATO ambitions were revived when Russia blocked its plan for direct military intervention against Syria last August.
Votos en contra. Sírvanse levantar la mano. Abstenciones. Levantar la mano.
Инициатором заблокированного проекта резолюции было хорошо известно, что он не имеет шансов быть принятым. Российская делегация четко и последовательно разъясняла: мы не можем пропустить документ по главе 7, открывающий путь к санкционному давлению, а дальше и к внешнему военному вмешательству в сирийские дела. Западные члены Совета отрицают наличие таких намерений, но почему-то отказываются исключить военное вмешательство.
Washington and the EU activated plans for regime change in Ukraine after then-President Viktor Yanukovych rejected proposals for closer EU ties that involved the imposition of draconian austerity measures against the population. Now, in the latest stage of this conspiracy, NATO and the EU have seized on the tragic crash of Malaysia MH17 in eastern Ukraine to further their criminal objectives. The Western powers have not produced a shred of substantive evidence to back their claims that pro-Russian separatists, backed by Moscow, were responsible for the deaths of the 298 people on board. In fact, satellite and intelligence evidence provided by Russia coupled with the aggressive actions of the Ukrainian regime to prevent access to the crash site, including the systematic bombardment of towns and cities in the vicinity, point to the likelihood that forces aligned with Kiev were responsible for downing the aircraft. Nonetheless, Washington and the EU have announced sweeping sanctions against Moscow in the wake of the crash. The immediate aim of the financial sanctions announced in the last weeks is to encourage Russia's oligarchs to depose President Vladimir Putin and install a more pro-Western regime.
Unfortunately, Russia has not done anything in that period that we can discern to help de-escalate and to fulfill the Geneva Agreement. On the contrary, they are now conducting large-scale military exercises on the eastern borders of Ukraine and refusing to call on those occupying buildings in eastern Ukraine to withdraw from them. So in those circumstances, as you just heard President Obama saying, we will go ahead with additional sanctions. The cost to Russia will rise. We will always keep the diplomatic doors fully open. We want to work with Russia on this. Well, these are most likely to be, we're still discussing them, of course, with other countries. They are likely to be an extension of existing sanctions, of the travel bans and asset freezes on individuals. The more names we add to that list, the more they do bite in the Russian economy. But we are also working on more far-reaching measures of economic, trade and financial sanctions. Of course, we've always hoped for our sake, for Europe's sake, for America's sake, as well as for Russia's sake, that we don't have to go ahead with those things. We want world trade to expand and improve.
But as the UK Defence Committee report makes clear, the US and the major European powers are not only prepared to wreck the Russian economy, with potentially grave consequences for the world economy as a whole, nor are they restrained by the possibility that their actions will lead to civil war within Russia itself. Their ultimate goal is the dismemberment of the Russian Federation and the seizure of its vital resources, even if their reckless gambit risks nuclear war. The UK is playing a central role in these provocations. In October, NATO's Exercise Black Eagle will begin in Poland in what has been described as a show of strength against Russia. The British government has announced it is sending a battle-ready unit to participate, comprising 1,350 troops and more than 350 armoured and other vehicles, its largest commitment in the region since the Georgian provocation in 2008. Light infantry troops from the UK's 1st Battalion, the Duke of Lancaster's Regiment, are also participating later this month in the US-led Exercise Sabre Junction in Poland, involving 16 NATO and partner nations.
The exercise has been a really good opportunity to practice interoperability between a UK unit sitting within another battalion from another NATO army. It's not something I've ever practiced before in my career.
David Cameron has announced that the UK should be prepared to use its prowess to help defeat the ISIS. He has also wanted an alliance with Iran. Cameron's remarks came as dozens of ISIS leaflets were distributed in London's Oxford Street. Meanwhile, a successful British rapper is reported to have posted a photograph of himself holding a severed head on Twitter. Are these events related? Is the government trying to spread fear in society for its military or security plans? How real is Cameron's remarks about combating the ISIS? To discuss such issues, I have interviewed two prominent political observers. On one hand, the British government warns of the grave dangers imposed by the British ISIS members who are about to come back from Iraq or Syria. And on the other hand, these are the very people who the government was supporting during the last 2 years.
There is something incredibly bizarre coming out of the British government. I think David Cameron and the British system, in effect, are sort of blowing hot and cold over this whole ISIS issue. On the one hand, they're describing ISIS as the biggest threat to British interests in almost a decade. But on the other, they're actually allowing many recruits to openly recruit, to openly distribute leaflets, to openly perform the sort of communication of this group. So there is something very bizarre in the British political position on ISIS. But I think what it actually indicates is the need for the establishment to have some sort of bogeyman, some sort of scaremongering issue that it can use and rattle at any given opportunity. I mean, we know that Britain is still recovering from the recession, the unemployment remains high, the housing bubble is about to burst. So there are many things that are worrying the British public, and I think there needs to be a distraction. And what better than a Muslim organization that really ticks all the boxes of evil? You know, it's almost Hollywood film-like evil. That can be used from time to time by the British state to say, well, listen, this is what we're fighting, instead of actually tackling the issues that are really important to the British public.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Where did ISIS get all their weapons from? They've got some quite sophisticated weaponry, and most of that weaponry has come from Western money, not directly, a lot of it through Saudi Arabia and Prince Bandar when he was in charge of intelligence in Saudi Arabia. And so one has to ask, where did ISIS get their weapons? Well, of course, they got them from people like the Free Syrian Army, which was being supported by Britain, in fact, being supported by the entire London media for several years in their attacks on President Assad. And this is the way that the Western forces work these days, is they create these enemies. Now, one of the problems is now that enemy is supposed to be the bad guys. One minute they're the good guys, next minute they're the bad guys. This exact same thing is, was pointed out during the Syria conflict when we were being told, well, Al-Qaeda, they're terrible, they did 9/11, they're the bad guys. And suddenly, when people who are ex-Al-Qaeda fighters are fighting in Libya and Syria, now they're the good guys. So their story is starting to fall apart. Any intelligent person around the world can start to see this. The only trouble is, of course, this kind of view is very rarely, if ever, put in the Western media. So ultimately, it's a game that's being played, and I think we're starting to see that the ISIS organisation with their black flags that they wave around, that's actually something which has been fuelled by the Western encouragement of the rebellions in Libya and Syria. And also, important to note that this is a very sophisticated organisation with military supply lines, bank accounts, and a whole kind of administration behind it. And the West, if it wanted to, could close that down in no time. Within 5 seconds, they could close those bank accounts, they could close those, have sanctions on the organisations, they could close that organisation down that's backing up ISIS. But they won't do it because they want this hornet's nest to attract disgruntled people in the Middle East and to create even more chaos. They failed in Syria, they hope they're going to succeed with ISIS in Iraq and Syria. But unfortunately, I think this is going to ultimately going to fail. We will have to see how it all works out. But one thing's for sure, ISIS is a creation ultimately of the West, and those people who are attracted into it are being duped by the West in the same way as many people who were fighting on both sides back in the old medieval crusades.
And shortly after Cameron's remark, leaflets of ISIS supporters are distributed in London, spreading fear throughout the society. Are these links related?
It's very bizarre that an organisation such as ISIS, which is obviously known to be a terrorist organisation that has been described as such by everyone, and particularly by the British government, could be allowed to distribute so openly leaflets in an attempt to recruit potential members to travel to Iraq and perform the supposed jihad. So it is a very alarming development, I think, that this organisation that is described as so dangerous, so threatening to British interests in particular, could actually be allowed to operate with such ease in the streets of London.
Well, you can see it's quite clear that London is secretly cooperating with ISIS, is allowing these kind of groups to operate, doing leaflets here in London. We had back in 2004, 2005, in the run-up to the London bombings, we had similar sorts of groups operating at Finsbury Park Mosque, the main mosque in London. And the people in the mosque reported these groups to the police, reported them to the security services, and those security services did absolutely nothing about them. Abu Hamza, who was one of those people, was reporting that he was working closely with British security services. So again, evidence for extreme Islamic groups working under the cover of being created by NATO intelligence, Mossad, Israeli intelligence, MI6 and the CIA.
So can we say that in contrast with Cameron's claims, the ISIS is in fact acting for the interests of Britain in the Middle East?
I think ISIS at the moment is probably represents probably the biggest threat to the Middle East, but probably to the wider Muslim world. It's an incredibly dangerous organization. Its aims are very divisive. It's really stoking hatred within the Muslim community, but of course it's also targeting minorities. It's in blatant violation of every single Muslim value that has actually made the Muslim world and made Muslim history. So it's very bizarre that an organization such as this could even recruit. It's a very hard sell, really. ISIS is a very hard sell for any young Muslim to be attracted to an organization that actually represents everything that is wrong with the society, and it's incredibly detrimental to the Muslim world. So it is blatantly clear at this moment that ISIS doesn't represent Muslim interests, but obviously works, if anything, for those parties who are in opposition to the Muslim world and to Muslim unity. I think this is what needs to be said and done. And I think this is why ISIS is a very dangerous organization. And I think that this is really why most Muslims are actually fiercely opposed to this dangerous organization.
In our next show, we will have a special guest, a Takfiri mentor, on our show. Keep those comments coming in on Facebook, because we do not hide. We are up for all sorts of interaction, whether you are with us or against. Our page is named UK Desk Press TV, or you could send your emails to britain@presstv.ir. As always, there will be more divisive stories from us next week, so keep on viewing The Monarchy, because The Monarchy will keep on viewing the UK. Take care, stay well, and goodbye from me and the team.
Chance away with pomp and circumstance. Come join our merry dance.